This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org. And acornradio.org. A podcast will be available this show on these websites and affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to two people. We're talking to Ernest Johnson, the executive director of Ubuntu Village, and the program associate over there, Genesis Calderon. Welcome, welcome, Ms. Calderon, and welcome, Mr. Johnson, to Wade's World.
Thank you for having us.
So we didn't meet all that long ago, but it's right on time. Juvenile justice, that's what you guys are doing. You're doing a whole lot more. You shared with me some of it. But first, let's tell people what the village is, where you got the name, how you... Tell us what's going on here in New Orleans, Louisiana, with Ubuntu Village.
Yes. I work for another nonprofit organization that done similar work in the past. We sort of had a divorce, and two of my colleagues decided that we should continue to do the work. And we were thinking about what the name of the organization may have been. So intentionally, we went over a couple of different names for the organizations and found that Ubuntu was something that we wanted to stick with, in particular because it reflects the nature of a human being. It's a collective process that doesn't reflect on individuals or self. It reflects on how, as a community, we can work together and have resources for those who live in our community.
And what language does the word come from?
It's an African proverb that says it's a reflection of yourself when you help others in a way that you want to be helped for yourself.
So when my people in Korogochu and Nairobi listen, they'll immediately know what that word is? Or yes. Where is the dialect? Is it Swahili or what?
I don't actually know if it's Swahili.
Okay, there's a Google for you. There's a research question. Luckily, we've got Genesis, the program associate. We won't find out before the end of the show, maybe, but well, there'll be listeners who'll be sending me email. But that's a great term. I am because we are. And how have you made that come to life first?
We've made it come to light. In particular, we work around juvenile justice. We understand that the children, how are our children? So we understand that the greatest impact that we can have is saving our children, but before they're indulged in a criminal justice system, and understand that it's a critical point where we can change the behavior or give assistance to those who have been impacted by mass incarceration.
But juvenile justice all over the country has been one dark, terrible hole. So are you throwing a rope down there? How are we getting people out of what has been such a shameful situation for so many people in so many cities around the country?
So one of the first things we thought about, we wanted to introduce a harm reduction, understanding that it's a holistic approach that families, the community, everybody has to have a role in it, and everyone is impacted by it. So we're throwing everybody in. We want everybody to join in. And through doing our work at the juvenile courts here in New Orleans, we understand that we just can't push back against the system and expect it to change. We need those stakeholders to be part of this solution and to kind of get them to understand that if we really want to do what's best from a community perspective, that we have to push back against the systemic system and get them to understand that, you know, this is our children. In particular, when you talk about in New Orleans, 99% of the children who are impacted are African American. So we wonder, why is that though? Not that we advocate for any other kid to get arrested, but why is that 99% of the kids that are going through the juvenile justice system is African American? And we also understand that it's impacted or some of the things that create these issues are from poverty, a lack of economic opportunities, a lack of equity in education that promotes sort of like the school to prison pipeline. And what we're here to do is try to derail that that system.
And that's probably why Village is part of the name of Bell's organization, because it is a holistic approach and the community has to be involved. Is that right?
Exactly. When you understand, most people who work around criminal justice understand that, you know, we can't arrest our way out of this issue.
Although God knows they've tried. You know, and we're past the juveniles now.
Yeah.
What a scandal in this country. But yeah,
definitely. You know, we understand we can't arrest ourselves. We understand how systemic systems work, and we understand that, you know, we want the whole community accountable just as well, but we understand we have to have a holistic approach. And even though when we use arresting ourselves and sentencing young people, at the end of the day, they are coming back to that same community. So how can we be supportive in a way, not only for those young people, but for their parents, and also allow preventative measures to happen before, because we don't want 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds being incarcerated or impacted by that
how
system.
How old is Ubuntu Village? How long have y'all been working on this problem? Predated the Village, as did some of your associates, but how long is the organization?
So we are 2 years young and growing, and we have a transition plan. Our goal is to build it in 5 to 7 years and leave it to some young people, you know, and have peer-to-peer education so that we are not stuck in a system and say, you know, I'm working there till I'm 25, I'm the ED till I'm, you know, 30 years from now. That's not our goal. Our intention is to build this for some young people, for a place that they can have the support and have the education to move forward, and for us to just kind of give it to them and, you know, pass the baton to them.
So give us a sense for the listeners what a day in the life of either Genesis or Ernest is. So, what were y'all doing today before we started taping this show?
So I'll start with, we had a couple of visits to the Youth Study Center to try to arrange some programming there.
Okay, now what's the Youth Study Center?
The Youth Study Center is the place where kids are pre-adjudicated prior to going to secure care or getting found guilty, in other words, in the system, and that's where they're housed at prior to and going through court proceedings.
So this is not a university think tank we're talking about.
No.
This is something right this side of bars.
In other words, it's a detention
center. Secure care is like a jail.
Yeah.
Youth study centers where they look at your ass before you go to jail.
Exactly.
So we don't want anybody to be confused out there that somehow we're living in heaven with the juvenile system in New Orleans as compared to Chicago or New York or wherever.
And I totally agree with you, Wade, because when we talk about jail, you know, we talk about juvenile justice reform, they talk about how adequate we can make the jail. And I say, like, you know, I don't think you're going to find anywhere in the country that there's going to be a jail that's going to match the Hilton or the Marriott, right?
And I think you have to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company to get a billet in one of those places, you know. That's one of the golf courses in Pennsylvania. That's where some of the president's buddies are hoping they end up. But for the rest of us, and particularly for African American and other young people to get caught up in this terrible system, it's not going to ever be a good place to be.
Yeah, and I'll let you know, Genesis has been with us maybe 4 or 5 months, and she's learning the landscape of it. And I'll just let her explain her experience in talking to some of the directors and visiting the school inside of that detention center.
Excellent. Genesis, go wild.
Well, yeah, as Mr. J mentioned, my involvement has really kind of increased over the summer because I am a grad student, so I have classes and things. But as of now, I'm working on a project that seeks to make tangible materials that would be useful in an orientation session for new parents whose children are going through this justice system. There's a real need. As I study linguistics, so dialectal differences as well as legal jargon and legal language really create a pretty big barrier for a lot of families who come through, and especially because, I mean, even for myself, not knowing what these terms are, pre-adjudication, you know, and it can be very intimidating. So,
this translation of mandatory legal right?
It It is, but that it's only from different languages. So the government has recognized that there is a need for simplified language, but they've never really acted necessarily on that, never had like a mandate that says courts have to explain to people what all of these kind of overwhelming terms mean.
But so, if I only speak Spanish, I can demand a Spanish language translator.
Yes, exactly.
Even as a juvenile, right?
Right, okay. Yes. It can be difficult. I mean, depending on the situation, there are situations where people have to bring in their own translator. And so if the family doesn't have access to that, you know, what then happens? There's a complete breakdown there because the officials can't communicate with them. And
well, the immigration system is obviously different than the juvenile system.
Right.
We're dealing with young people and all the stories about the inadequate ability of translation to work in these immigration hearings at the border. Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can just imagine that's maybe on steroids, but this is on a bad drug too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And, so even within the language. So I'm working on a project with these. We're going to have a research team of parents whose children are currently in the system, who have questions, right, about whether it's kind of procedural or vocabulary related. We're going to draw up these questions, the most pressing questions that they have that they think would be a good introduction for parents who are just starting out. We are seeking to meet with different stakeholders of the court and have parents kind of interview with them. And the idea is that with this fact-finding, one, our parents will be more educated in the system and they can navigate it better. And also that they'll help us find ways that will communicate clearly to new parents.
Gotcha. I've been in the juvenile courts, and you show up in the morning, it is a cattle call from chaos. Nobody has a clue what's going on, and whoever opens the door, not too helpful.
Yep.
I'm not Genesis or Ernest Johnson, so maybe y'all get a little bit better. But if you're just like Joe Smo and Jane Doe showing up there with your kids, I mean, we were all like, did you hear, it's like craziness. We're talking to Ernest Johnson, who's the executive director of Ubuntu Village, and the program associate over there, Genesis Calderon, about juvenile justice. And we're looking in the New Orleans context, but not because it's the worst, certainly not the best, but because this is an issue all over the country and New Orleans is a good window into it. When you're talking to stakeholders, when you're talking to these judges, tell people what, have we had any success? Is it water on a rock? I know. Come on. I met you the other day. You're an optimistic kind of guy. Give people some good news so they hang on to the end of the show, aren't
they? Right. So I tried to be optimistic, and I say it's very, very challenging when you're dealing with systemic stakeholders and trying to get them understand because, first of all, they're coming from a different place and they're trying to uphold the law. But what I can say about, we have made some progress. And the fact that we have judges listening to us, we have the folks at the detention center listening to us, we have in conversation with city officials on how can we do better. But our ultimate goal is to dig deeper to understand. Let's not have them there in the first place, because we understand if you build it, they're gonna fill it. And how do we eliminate this racial disparity in a way that the numbers go down and possibly close the construction of a new jail that's being built in a way that we work people out of some jobs to some degree. New Orleans, I mean, we have our, like any other city, we have our issues about, you know, how criminal justice reform is gone, but I think we are making some steps in the right direction if some of them stakeholders would take us a little bit more serious without actions against them and understand the perspective of parents, and it's why we continue to put out reports, allow parents to
Let's talk about one of those reports, Ernest, yeah. because 6 months ago, y'all put out a report called Parents Fighting for Youth Justice that was an interesting report, well-researched, and made some recommendations. Is that part of why you're having some impact? Why don't you tell people about that report, you and Genesis?
Yes, 6 months ago, we done a report on Parents for Fighting for Justice and trying to just get a holistic approach to get the courts and the judges to understand that this is what parents experience. And out of that report, as Genesis said, we allow the parents to do the research, we allow the parents to come up with the questions, and kind of done most of the work in the report. And in that report, we came up with solutions. And out of those solutions, we are currently working on trying to make some of those solutions reality, as in having a parent navigator to address some of the stuff that Genesis is talking. That's just a small component of it, that we want to have the literature and understanding that parents can understand and it coming from them. So we have made some small steps towards making that happen, but the reality of it, that even giving this to the courts decided that they can do it better. Mm-hmm. And they tried, but they're still going to give us the opportunity to make that possible. So we're working on creating and those solutions that were recommended by the families to make them a reality, which is taking a little longer than expected, but
everything takes some time. I thought the navigator was a brilliant idea. So let's dig a little deeper in that, because I know, like I say, my experience was like 2 minutes compared to what everybody goes through. But you can tell, if you had somebody there who knew what was going on, who could relate directly to the families, both the children and the parents, make a difference. People don't know their rights down there at all, do they? Mm-hmm. I mean, at least I didn't think they did. I didn't talk to every one of them, but you know, you start talking, because that's what I do, and it wasn't long before it was like, you know. But as an organizer, I had an armful of issues, you know, within. You know, they make you wait for hours, so you can create a mess.
Yeah, and that was one of the issues.
So I can imagine a navigator could just be so invaluable there.
Yes, that's one of the issues.
But I bet they're pushing back against that. They don't want somebody who's not on their payroll, do they?
Right, so that's one of the, I think the bottom line is, you being an organizer, you understand that, you know, you're talking the right talk and you're right, but yet you're wrong. Yeah. And understanding that we won't be accountable to anyone, you know, it'll be straight from the parent's perspective and holding them accountable. Mm-hmm. And you know, wage yourself and systemic institutions, everybody talk about accountability and transparency, but yet it's difficult to find in those kind of systems. So what we're doing is continue to push and make noise, and even at the point we may have to have action to amplify these issues, but right now we're giving them the benefit of the doubt to understand what we're going through and what it's going to take to make this successful.
But if there ever is an action, we'll help you, you know, we'll have to get you on here to do a broadcast spot, the two of you, to let people know what's happening. But I know when I was an organizer for Welfare Rights, because it's an open forum, these are public institutions, we were able to win Supreme Court decisions that allowed us to have recipients in the waiting rooms to be navigators, as you're calling them, and then we won the same thing with ACORN in Dallas, a public hospital, a huge, the equivalent of Charity or Grady. It was called Parkland Hospital in Dallas County, and there we could set up a table, we could be there, people couldn't get their health good, you know, couldn't get on Medicare, Medicaid, and now we have obviously affordable care. There are rights people could push for if they start, you know, not agreeing to what seems to be a reasonable thing. Some of these judges I know are trying to do the best thing. Some of them look like they're just, you know, like a payroll and, you know, keep their practice on the side. We're not naming names. I'm just saying that's the way it is.
Well, I guess that depends on what day of the week it is.
Okay. Well, it's payday a lot of those days for them. That's what I'm going to say. But in terms of talking to the children and parents, you must be just very excited about the response you're getting.
Yeah, the reality of that is too, it becomes challenging, because what we find that parents if not if themselves had been through this process either with some other sibling or somebody else. And parents, at the end of the day, they want the best for their kids, but in a lot of cases, they are not educated in a way or economically stable enough to really understand the process. So sometimes they just want to get rid of it, right? Get it over with as soon as possible. And that possesses another problem because sometimes the lawyers feel like that's the easier way out with the workloads that they have. So I think what is more important is not the systemic system and institution that we're educating the community and getting our parents the opportunity to be part of this process, mm-hmm. and to kind of lift them up in a way that, you know, they can understand and they can use this information to disseminate to their particular communities and their constituents so that we don't have that happening. And even in coming in a court, when you see somebody who look like you and been through it like you, it's much easier to understand them and to kind of, you know, flex with them a little bit more than it will be from systemic systems that are only going to do what the script say do, right?
Well, your point is juvenile justice, and what you're talking about is, yeah, there's a juvenile system, but not a justice system right now. We're talking to Ernest Johnson, who's the executive director of Ubuntu Village. I am because we are, and the program associate over there, Genesis Calderon, who's also a red-hot student at Tulane University, studying all this good stuff with Ernest and his gang. So, fees for poor families. There was an article, you know, this is news all over the country. There's lawsuits being filed against various jurisdictions of courts that are basically discriminating against people because not only their race, but also their income, making the whole process even more part of the reason why people are in a hurry to get out and cost money. Now, I think I read that the juvenile justices said they're going to do away with fees. Is that correct in Orleans Parish or no?
That is correct. And I applaud the chief judge for pushing that and other judges for signing on to it. It's a small step towards doing the right thing because the funds is very little funds that they were collecting.
That's what shocked me when I looked at the bottom line. It was like less than $2,000 is what they were getting.
Right. So
why were they bothering with that? Is that like the coffee fund or
right.
the Christmas party or what in the world, Ernest? I mean, I was embarrassed when I saw that. Man, we won one on this one. $1,600 or what was? You remember the figure?
Yeah, I think it was right at $1,900.
Okay, well then I was $2,000. I gave him a benefit of a doubt. Jeez, Louise.
But I think that's a credit to them also. Let's
Absolutely.
Not take
no,
that away.
It's a good thing they did, but. Yeah, not necessarily the first out of the chute.
Right. So because of, I think the small amount was because in the past they had been waiving the fees.
Yeah, I figured that had to be.
Right. So they had been waiving the fees for a lot of the parents. So I guess it came to a point. So we're getting such little. Why continue even trying to collect
the
fees?
And on the other hand, where the other courts in Orleans Parish lost on the fee and fine system because they didn't have a neutral hearing, they're appealing it. So in that sense, okay, props to the juvenile judges for saying, hey, uncle, we'll get rid of this. But the rest of the judges are still trying to penalize people because they weren't born rich.
Right, and let's keep in mind, so this may have a small impact, but we have to understand most of the kids who are adjudicated by the state. So if the kids are adjudicated in some instance by the state, they still may be subject to these fines. So on the front end, it sort of kind of give them some leeway.
Got to start rolling somewhere.
But on the back end, if they are adjudicated for, you know, crimes or held in secure care, and in some cases there's laws that say they have to pay for them kids being incarcerated based on the amount of income they got. So we have a lot of work to do, but again, I prefer a lot of the work we do is around local and community work within inside the city, because when you go to other jurisdictions and talk about statewide legislation, it takes a whole lot of more work and a lot of capacity that we don't have at this particular time.
Well, and given the complexity in a lot of southern states, we don't have time to waste either. These are pushing rocks up a hill right now in terms of getting some kind of justice at that level. So in some of the conversations you're having with stakeholders, as you call them, you're seeing some real progress. There's going to be something that some other things we can see start to happen over the next 6 months, year, 2 years? What you're thinking?
I'm hoping that the city has this new office, the Office of Youth and Families. We have been in conversation with them, so we are hoping that they're having conversation with a lot of community stakeholders also. So we're hoping that out of that, that something comes from that particular area that promotes the wellness of young people in the city of New Orleans. And being optimistic, I mean, like you said, it's pushing rocks. Sometimes we don't have the strength to push something so far, but kind of staying grounded and understanding that on the ground is where it's most important, because it's people's lives and it's every day that they are impacted by some of these issues. And to try to support, as many families as possible, and continue to work as closely as we can with the judges and, the detention facilities and everyone who has an investment in young people to promote their wellness.
And you're getting some, I think your staff is fairly small from what you described, but you're getting some real support from volunteers that are coming in and helping carry the weight as well?
Yes, 80% of our staff is volunteer, right? And even our board has expertise that they lend to our organization. So again, we were very intentional. We're very intentional about who volunteers with us. We're very intentional about the direction we, it's a collective process in the name of Ubuntu that I am, because we are, as an executive director, I don't make all the decisions. It's a collective process. I will refer to Genesis about, what you think, and let her, spread her wings in a way that she can grow and understand the work that we're doing. And we have a couple other volunteers and my co-founders that they play a very, very vital role in making me successful. And we do this with limited funds. So, it's a challenge, and it's a passion of mine because of what I see in the community that keep us going.
Well, I don't want to get off the subject, because I think this is a subject, but how did you get involved in this in the first place? This is obviously more than a job for you.
Oh, yeah. There was a couple of incidents that not only my neighbors, but my kids was involved in. Right. And when I went in there, I was looking at, I went in there to save my kids and my neighbors, and I realized that so many people was experiencing it.
This was a system problem, not a personal problem.
It wasn't a personal problem, right?
Yeah.
And that everybody didn't have the willpower or the strength to fight it in a way that I was able to.
You have to be so persistent.
Yeah.
The morning I spent down there, family after family was telling me how many times they'd been rescheduled. So people lose work. They've been down there sometimes 2, 3, 4 times trying to get a judge, trying to get a witness. The judge would let them off. It's just crazy.
Yeah, that's one of the most vital things we're working on too. It's about trying to get the judges to manage their docket in a way that's efficient enough that families not missing work. As the youth study detention center is located in a sort of isolated area, where there's no public transit. So, if there's elderly people and they don't have transportation, they have to walk. And to walk there and sit there for a couple of hours only to learn that your case has been continued, it's very frustrating without anyone coming out and giving any information. So that's, as a parent navigator, we're trying to say, look,
Give us a break. Let's try to be fair, even if we don't succeed.
Huh? Right, and there's policy that you're not allowed to bring any electronic devices in there. So one of the things we said, let's put some clocks up, so people can, value their time and at least see what time based on what's the rest of their day. So they comply with that. So they are making small steps towards, but as Wade, in systemic institutions, you fix 2 doors, 5 more break.
And we live in a broke ass city.
Yeah.
So we don't have unlimited resources. Even if they wanted to do the right thing, it's often a struggle to patch it together. Unfortunately, we could talk about juvenile justice forever, and there's a lot going on, but we're coming down to the last minute. I want to make sure you tell people how they can ask more questions about Ubuntu, how they can find out who you are and reach out to you. And hey, they got some extra money they want to put towards your organization, where do they go? Tell me.
Definitely. You can go to www.ubuntuvillagenola.com.
Better spell it all out now.
That's
Ernest,
U-B-U. NTU Village, V-I-L-L-A-G-E, NOLA.org. We're located at 430 North Galvez Street, 70119, New Orleans, Louisiana. We appreciate donations. I'll let Genesis close us out with a...
Well, and I'm going to add one thing. It's E. Johnson
at... Yeah, and on our website, you can go to info@GoToVillageNOLA.org, or you can contact me at E. Johnson.
Okay, Genesis, big finish. Okay, you know, we did the money pitch. You know, an organizer would say she just swallowed the ass. She's good. Thank you both for being with us. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke from Wade's World.